Dane Moore joins me to discuss the incredible joy of Naz Reid's story, how much Anthony Edwards is too much Anthony Edwards, and we wonder if Craig Kilborn is Minnesota nice. All that and much more coming up right now on this episode of Divine Intervention. I'm going to get myself in fighting trim. Scope out every angle of unfair advantage. I'm going to bribe the officials. I'm going to kill all the judges. It's going to take you people years to recover from all of the damage. Our mother has been absent ever since we founded Rome, but there's going to be a party when the wolf comes home. John Gennaro, count me in! Today's first words belong to the Mountain Goats from the song Up the Wolves off their wonderful 2005 record, The Sunset Tree. Second episode with a Mountain Goats intro, feeling pretty good about that. But the rest of them belong to me. Welcome to Divine Intervention, a self-help podcast about basketball. My name is Dan Devine. And before we get rolling, here are three things that I am grateful for today. Number one, I get paid by Yahoo Sports to write about the NBA and talk about it into this microphone and into that camera. Pretty good deal. Number two, pineapple. Juicy and delicious, a lovely treat to slice up for my daughter in the morning for breakfast, and then take a little bit of a slice for daddy over there on the other side. Never going to say a slice for daddy again. Apologies to everybody who heard that. So tasty that I feel like I'm getting away with something, even as I bolster my immune system with vitamin C and manganese. And number three, just as important as all of that, I get to spend part of my morning talking with someone whose basketball coverage I find to be similarly delicious and similarly full of essential nutrients. Today's guest is someone whose work I'm pretty sure I first encountered at either Canis Hoopus or Zone Coverage, one or the other, but who, when I first encountered it, I vividly remember thinking, well, that guy's smart, and he pays very close attention to the Minnesota Timberwolves. These days, you can still find him paying very close attention to the Minnesota Timberwolves and other NBA stuff on the Dane Moore NBA podcast. A delightful listen, and I am thrilled to have him here. Friends, a warm welcome for Dane Moore. Dane, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to talk some Wolves. It's funny, you know, you get the national pod invite as soon as things start falling apart in Minnesota. I see how it is.
Well, this is a show about feelings and emotions. And when everything's feeling good, there's kind of like only so much to talk about. And then, oh no. Yeah, then we start going down. So we will get into that because as you mentioned here, I'm very interested in the emotional state of the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that's had so many sort of false starts and dashed hopes over the years, but has been one of the absolute best stories of this NBA season front to back, like since the opening tip all the way through, to this point, and is now trying to kind of find a new normal after getting dealt a pretty big body blow last week. So we're meeting them at a very interesting time in their lives on Divine Intervention, and I'm looking forward to unpacking that with you here today. And we will get into that. But first, here on Divine Intervention, we always try to operate from a place of joy. So, Dane Moore, what is something from the world of the NBA that is bringing you joy this week?
You know, Dan, I thought about it. I was like, okay, you know, I'll try and think of something like cute that shows, you know, I'm watching the NBA all the time, like something like Sam Merrill's jump shot.
Yes, right. But you got to prove that you're a sicko.
I'm not. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to say Naz Reid. It's not even just about, it is about the opportunity that he is getting the opportunity. And like you said, as the Wolves have been an isolated, cool story for this season in the expectations they've obviously exceeded. Like, I think Naz is maybe one of the best of those stories in the NBA over the last five. This is his fifth year in the league. And I think, like, personally, it's extra fun or joyful, if you will, because when Naz got to the team, it was like the dark days, you know?
Sure.
And when you are on a beat and, you know, just covering one team, and for me, that's often been a team who's had a record that's looked like 16-40. Like, what you do in my role is you try to find things, right? You're like, you know, can Jordan McLaughlin be a future third point guard? You know, like, I've done a lot of segments like that on there. And Naz is the one that I actually, like, believed in when I was doing that, like, 3-4 years ago. Was I saw, like, the outlines of this. And you're looking for it more, like, when you are, again, covering a bad team, you're looking for that thing that can not only exceed expectations, but I think in Naz's case, it's like he could exceed expectations to be even more than like an undrafted player who ends up being a role player. It became a decent possibility in my mind pretty early in his career that I was like, I think this dude could be a dude, you know, in the league, and has got his body in better and better shape. I mean, he's lost like 40 pounds since the combine. Wow. And just the growth, and as a fan of basketball, the way he plays it, the way he's put the work in, from like the fun parts of it, his bag for a 6'10 guy, to just like the day-to-day work ethic, that's fun, that's joyful, and we're getting to see that more now in the, obviously, the absence of Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah, the funny thing is, every time we've talked about, like, you know, Jake Fisher and I on No Cap Room, and, you know, Jake will absolutely be a guest on Divine Intervention. We're definitely getting around to Jake. He's going to show up here at some point.
He's not going to show up here. Don't tell anybody.
Whenever Naz Reid comes up, I'm always like, and, you know, he's got to be one of the people that you talk about for Sixth Man of the Year. Like, the way that the Wolves season has gone, the role he's played, the way, like, as everything has sort of come to coalesce for Minnesota, him being able to line up comfortably next to either Rudy Gobert or Karl-Anthony Towns, you're like, this, and then like to carry some minutes without them, like, this just works. And then, of course, what winds up happening, unfortunately, is a major piece goes down, he's elevated into a larger role and gets more shots, and then all of a sudden his odds shoot up, right? Like, this is the way it all works. Like, what it took is somebody else getting, you know, their light dimmed a little bit for him to get some shine. But you're absolutely right. And like, the Wolves, well, at the risk of pivoting to away from Joy, but we'll get into the sort of the meat and potatoes of the episode, that he's a great example of something where, like, when you looked at the Wolves initially, in the construction of the team, there were so many people that had so many questions about, you're over-indexing on bigs in an era where, like, is that the right move to do? You know, we're coming out of the, like, big wings are everything. And now it's, you know, you have to be able to match up with the Embiids and Jokic's and Giannis's of the world. But, like, did the Wolves have the right mix of guys? And then, like, the growth, it gets better. You can have guys that figure out how to work together better and develop their own games. Naz Reid, a great example of that. Like, their skill set and the talents were already there, but how did it all fit together was kind of the big question. And this was a team that has been a team where it all started to fit together. It was just so much neater this year, so much cleaner. And I'm wondering, as you said, you've watched many iterations of the Timberwolves, each with their own sort of minor sparks or some good things to get excited about. But when last year kind of ended and you're like, well, they took this big swing, Rudy made X, Y, or Z impact, but it didn't all come together. Cat was in and out. They didn't have everything kind of clicking at the right time. When it started to go right at the beginning of this year, what were you thinking as you watched this team? Did you think, like, it's everything is lining up? Or were you like, I don't know, I don't want to kind of get too far ahead of myself here?
Well, the first thing I did was draw the connection to about this time of last season, which is when Naz Reid got hurt, broke his wrist, out for the season. There was, we affectionately called it Naz Week right before that. And it was like the first time, honestly, it was like a West Coast road trip. It was Sacramento, somewhere, Phoenix. Phoenix is the game where he broke his wrist. And I think it was like February of last season, end of February. And, it was the first time it made sense, Dan. You're like, okay, I see the vision of multiple bigs at a time. And the idea of skilled bigs being able to work at a forward position. And that's kind of, that makes sense. If you can activate that, which you can in Karl-Anthony Towns and you can in Naz Reid, there was reason to believe that there was something there. And honestly, it got, like, Naz Reid got referenced to me a little bit too much from, like, the Wolves front office and others, like, over the course of the summer, where they're like, yeah, we're running it back. And I was like, all right, guys, it was like three games. You know, I like Naz too, but that idea has really, like, proven true. They did double down on it. They ran it back. They went with the skilled bigs look, believed that that could work. And honestly, they believed it could work defensively, which I was the most skeptical of, which major credit to Kat and Naz this season for chasing on the perimeter. Like, it, which is just night and day different to them. They were just both entered their career. Karl, for the first 7 years of his career, dropping, right? You know, he is just back to the rim center. Naz too has kind of no idea what he's doing defensively. I remember, like, his first game he ever played, and I think he got called for defensive 3 seconds like 6 times. Like, literally did not understand. Like, it's a 2-3 zone, but you got to get out of there, bud. So there's just been this like evolution that I think started last season. And if you let some of your skepticism go, which I've had, like, eventually got to once the season went along, you go, yeah, there are some dots to connect here. And with Rudy Gobert playing so much better, that, like, when that all coalesced together, you have the two skilled bigs plus Gobert looks like defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert from the Utah days, you're like, all right, yeah, I believe this can be a really good regular season team, and let's stress test that over the course of the year for the playoffs. And I think that's what they've been doing until now, right? Another injury, but yeah, they've made me believe that they can be at least a really, really good regular season team.
Belief is such an important word, because I think you're right. Like, there's been so much skepticism. People like me, I mean, I was on board initially at the idea of what are the Wolves good at 2 seasons ago? It's like that offense is elite. They've got, you know, prime, you know, all NBA caliber floor spacing big man. They've got an elite on ball creator with, you know, room to grow in Ant, a finisher there. Where they don't defensive rebound well, they don't protect the rim well. They just basically are aftermarket parts, snap on a top 10 defense. Like, that's what Rudy was going to be.
Yeah.
And I think we undersold, many of us, how difficult it is to make that kind of midstream addition when, you know, Carl was missing time in training camp, when Rudy was coming off of Eurobasket. Like, and you had the injuries, as you mentioned, sort of throughout the year. So for it to come together at the beginning of the season, it showed so much belief from the front office, from Tim Connelly, from Chris Finch, but also, like, Karl Anthony Towns is on like a $250 million contract as a multiple time all NBA center. And he could have just been like, no, I'm not playing right. power forward and having to be like the low man rotation guy chasing fours. Oh, you know, Naz Reid just got paid for doing what he's done the last couple of years. He could have been like, you know, I don't know that I'm going to want to do that. Maybe a little bit harder to do when everybody's getting paid giant amount of money in the center room. But but in general, it took everybody saying, like, it didn't go the way we expected last season or the way we hoped for, but we believe it can work. And that's, as I kept watching them that first, you know, first 25 games to first 30 games, you know, on and on, like, they're huge everywhere. They have shooters. They have more playmaking with that, like, extraordinarily savvy move to bring in Mike Conley and then Nikhil Alexander Walker as, like, what seemed at the time like a throw-in who wound up being an absolutely vital part of the deal and in this rotation. And you say, like, well, what am I missing? Where are they falling short? Yes, the crunch time offense has been something everyone's talked about. And do they have really enough playmaking, enough shooting in some of these lineups? But if they believe I can see this team going toe-to-toe with anybody, and then last week happens, and you get the news, Karl Anthony Towns, torn meniscus, going to need, you know, and then there's the uncertainty around the reporting of it. It's going to have surgical repair, maybe a month reevaluated, maybe the beginning of the playoffs. When you first hear that news, your reaction is what?
It's the guy that they can most afford to lose of the top guys. Sucks, right? Like, but because of Nas, because of Kyle Anderson, being able to bringing in those guys for Kat, it would just work a lot better than if it were Rudy, right? They don't have another five on the roster that can defend the rim at all, play drop coverage at all.
Sure.
With Anthony Edwards, they don't have a facsimile for that at all on the roster. And even if you want to stretch it a little bit further, you could even make an argument of Mike Conley. Like, they have Monte Morris now, but Conley, who's, you know, this isn't a great time to say that because he's had a rough last like 7-8 games. But back earlier in the season, you could even make an argument that that you could replace Kat more easily than you could have replaced Mike Conley. So to that end, I wasn't really freaked out about it. I thought that there was like still a path that they could be, you know, maybe obviously fall from the 1 to like the 3 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you knew it was a meniscus. And if it was one that he could come back, it's like, okay, that's a tough blow. But I think they have the facsimiles for Carl enough to be able to sustain enough to be able to, I don't know, still go like 12-8, 13-7 or whatever in the 20 games that Cat's going to miss. So it wasn't, to me, it didn't feel like the season was over when that happened. And then you saw that night in Indiana, Ant gets 44 in the way he gets his 44 and ends it with that block. And the emphatic nature of the way he did it, like, I just hadn't seen that from him before. And to me, it was like a real message of like, season's not over. And those things, both being true, the belief I have and some of the depth at the four, plus the way Ant delivered right away, I was like, yeah, I think this team can still be, you know, in the mix in the top of the West for the rest of the way. And then you do the weird thing of stitching Carl back in once the playoffs come. I don't know. I don't think it's a death knell.
I would agree with that. I would also just like to take a moment and say, you're like, I've never seen somebody or haven't seen many people do what Ant did on the that final play. I don't know if there's many people in the history of human civilization who could have done what Ant did on that last play. Right. Like, it's a short list, and I know LeBron James's name is on it, and I'm not sure how many other dudes are on that list where it's like, whoops, I made a mistake. I'm going to go erase that. I'm going to draw a bead on that guy at half court.
Yeah, man.
And then setting aside the, I get up, I block it with my left hand, my elbow is at like the bottom of the stanchion, my hand's at the top of the box. He hits his head on the rim, almost dies coming down, like has like an extraordinarily dangerous looking fall on that block.
Yeah.
And the thing that, it's weird that this is where my brain goes. He then has like a completely calm and collected post-game interview on the floor with Marnie Gellner afterward. And I'm like, you know what? If I hit my head at like 75 miles an hour on a metal circle and then fell 11 feet on my wrist, I don't know that I'm having like, I'm like walking us through the last few possessions of the game. I think I'm probably just, my head is screaming like, but I guess that's one, it's one way in which I am somewhat different than Anthony Edwards. Our explosive leaping ability, very similar, but everything else, you know, that's one differentiator between us.
He was so ice packed up in the locker room afterwards because yeah. he went to, like, I think probably most people only saw like the fourth quarter, the highlights of the fourth quarter and the block at the end. Ant literally rolled his ankle and went back to the locker room on the very first play of that game.
Yeah.
Which Ant is like getting a little boy who cried wolf with some of the injury stuff and goes back to the locker room about three times a week on average. But at the same time, he rolled his ankle. He's been rolling his ankle over the course of the season. I get it. Painful. And then I think it was the second quarter. He gets upended by like Nembhard or Nesmith or somebody and comes down and like
one of their A knees. One of the many guys on the Pacers. Yes. Yes. Right.
And goes back to the locker room again there. And then ends the game by hitting his head on the rim backboard and then comes down and catches his wrist. So it was funny going into the locker room afterwards, and he's a 22-year-old kid. He's not normally like completely strapped up in ice. He had like the hand that's just like a claw, you know, where he's trying to describe like the, okay, I was coming from the right side, left side. He says this claw of an ice pack on, but he had the same interview with us afterwards, but it was cool. It was cool for him to be like, that was my favorite play of my career. And he said in my young NBA career, implying more to come. But that was, I thought that game was huge. Just given where they were in the schedule, it's such an easy time to be like, all right, we lost Cat. This is our fourth back-to-back since the All-Star break. That game against Indiana was starting it. This team's exhausted. They had an illness going through it. I'm always looking for that from Ant. Like, what badass leader thing are you going to do for this team to elevate? Like, I'm so fascinated by tracking Ant's leadership ascension over the course of his career and you know, for the next 5-10 years, right? I think that's going to define so much of who Ant is in the greater, you know, conversation about how great of a player he is. And to step up in that situation, that was a real check of a box to me. And I think in a lot of ways, emotionally saved the season, or at least saved an immediate long losing streak after the Cat injury.
I love that framing of it. That's, you're right. Like, there is a component of it that's, we can't let this go right now. Like, we are in a sort of
fragile place, or not fragile implies like softness. I don't mean that, but things are tentative right now. Like you just
They're in a fragile place. They are.
You lost a huge piece, someone who's hugely productive, who also, as we mentioned, embodied like what the sacrifices have been required to make this construction work. Katz deserves tons of credit for that. And so it's like, well, we're in the middle of this, or starting this road trip. We have this like death march of a schedule, we are not able to gain any separation from Oklahoma City or Denver. Like it's all kind of so congested. And we just took a real like shot to the liver right now.
Yeah.
How do we survive that? And then the answer was like as much Anthony Edwards as is humanly possible. But I think that's a really interesting sort of place to go from here. So I wrote about Ant for the Yahoo Sports Today, went up just before we started recording. And like, there is that component of this is Anthony Edwards' time. And you're right. Like this is going to be his sort of first opportunity to, all right, we're going to find out the like where he is as a leader, where he is as the like mega usage, mega touches, like the numbers with when he's been on the floor without Kat. I think it was from PBP stats, something like 39 points and 7 assists per 100 possessions, usage rate up over 35. It's like Luka-ish territory in terms of workload and production, the touches, the time of possession, all of it goes way up without Kat on the floor. And so there's absolutely massive positives to that. 44 points in the 29-point second half against Indiana. And then there's also 44 points in two games on 50 shots over the weekend in two losses. Now, context, right? Two excellent defenses, Cleveland and then AD on the Lakers. Injuries, guys in and out. Rudy Gobert and Kyle Anderson both missing the LA game. Monte Morris missing both. Like, there are other things to consider there for sure. But I'm wondering, do you see, like, maximalist Ant as sort of the only answer here? Do you think that this is something where we're going to need to see Ant be more of a facilitator for others? Or is it just like Westbrook post KD, turn the volume up, rip off the knob, and that's got to be what it's got to be?
No, I mean, I've asked Finch about this over the past 3 years, of just kind of the idea of, are you grooming him into being the Harden, Luka, that type of big guard, point guard type thing? And Finch has been super resistant to that, you know, the entirety of his time in Minnesota with Ant. He's always thought that and said, you know, Ant's superpower is against a shifted defense. If we can get him on the second side, rather than being the one that's initiating the offense, like we're going to see his efficiency and effectiveness spike. And that's proven to be true. Now, they have leaned into more of what I call point Ant. At other times they did. Carl got hurt like Thanksgiving of last season. They kind of went through this phase of like, what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to be? It was a lot of D'Lo like right away after that. And then January came and January was point Ant. There was just some more injuries, kind of like where they're at right now. So maybe this is a dot to connect that in a more desperate situation, Finch will lean more into the Luka Harden heliocentric sort of thing. With Ant, but in general, he's resistant to it. He is such a flow-based offense guy, the inclusion of everything, the unscripted sort of way. Now, personally, I think when this team gets decimated, you need to sort of simplify it. You need to structure it. And I would say this team would benefit in this current roster construction for a lot more spread pick and roll with both Ant and Mike Conley. You're working with Rudy Gobert. I think it turns up some, but I don't think Finch is going to go like full Luka with this. In pockets when he's hot, you let it happen, like the Indiana game, but he still needs to, Ant doesn't have the like killer reads off of when they put two on the ball on him. That's the difference. He's nice with it sometimes. Like if he's able to like split, you know, the double up at the top there, he can get to the nail, spray to the left corner, right corner. It's not like he's a zero as a playmaker there, but he's kind of in the place I say like where they put two on the ball with him. He's knows he has to get off of it and does. But there are better ways, more elite, more potent ways to when they double you, to get off of it, to, you know, kind of that galaxy brain of it, of like, this guy's wide open in the corner.
Yeah.
This Gobert is there right under the basket for a catch and dunk. And Ant, before, whenever it is, whenever they make him a Luka, if they do, it's going to be another level, I think, of the playmaking to come from him. Right now, he's just kind of in get off of it or force his way through it. And that's not quite enough, in my opinion, to lean into the full, as you said, Westbrook Thunder type of play. I think they're going to still try and spread it around a decent amount.
Which makes a ton of sense. Yeah, you're going back and watching those games from the last three since Towns went down. Like, the drives are way up. The rim pressure is there. But there are you see so many instances where, and like, I understand, I mean,
the gap helps nuts now. The gap help is nuts. Like, it's not there. Like, he can't just drive through the basket. Plus, if Rudy's at the dunker, it's like, okay, beat the other team's best point of attack defender, navigate the gap help there, and then Gobert's guy's waiting for you at the rim. Like, that's tough, you know? He's got to move it in those situations.
Which requires some trust, right? And as you mentioned earlier, this is a time where, you know, like, if Mike Conley is, you know, shooting 32% from three since the trade deadline, or since the All-Star break, rather, and, you know, Kyle Anderson, of the many things that Kyle Anderson does well, being like the, you get the ball to him and he goes right up with it, like, or he might be able to make something happen against a shifted defense, but
not from the corner.
Not from the corner. And you can understand Ant being like, the best thing for us right now might be me going straight into four dudes and trying to make something happen. Like, just, you know, put on the cape, totally, put on the wings and see where we can go. But one of the players that I'm really interested in that context, because, you know, you freeze frame anything and you can write whatever story you want off of it, right? And I've made a career out of it. But on a lot of those drives, you look at it and you're like, man, Jaden McDaniels is looking awful lonely over there in the corner. Or like, that is a, you drive into four guys, that's a baseline drive for him, or that's a catch and shoot for him. But he's also not a guy who's like a high efficiency player in some of those situations and has been struggling with his shot a little bit. I know Finch talks about him as a barometer for their offense. Yeah. I'm wondering where you see his role in this, like, not, I don't want to say post Cat, like he's never coming back, but in the no Cat atmosphere right now, as they're in the no Cat room, where does Jaden McDaniels kind of fit into the ecosystem there?
He's got to be better, man. He's got to be it's got to turn up. And I think the Lakers game, which I think you watched there too, Nas has 21 points in the first half and they have Anthony Davis on him guarding, you know, is Nas's primary matchup. They did the Jokic thing and they switched Rui onto Nas in the second half and they put Davis on, you know, the least threatening option so he could get chill by the rim. And I think Nas only had 4 points in the second half. And the least threatening option the Lakers chose was Jaden McDaniels. And it was like the very first possession, Ant does beat his guy and the gap help. And then Davis is just there and Ant kind of like looks around, travels, you know, and I was like, uh-oh. And you know, that because now Jaden's wide open. And then Jaden, I think the next possession takes an open three, misses it, forces a drive. The next time I think he got blocked by Davis or blocked by some, didn't finish it at the basket. And we've seen this before where teams have been like, given the options, we're going to kind of ignore McDaniels here. The Celtics did it with Porzingis in that game that the Wolves won at Target Center at the beginning of the season. It's not only that, like, you hope that Jaden can give you more offensively. They need him to give more offensively if teams aren't going to respect them and they're just going to respect him and just put their center on him. That game wasn't great. It was like 4.5 minutes into the third quarter. Finch subbed him out for TJ Warren just to be like, we need a little bit more offensive threat here because they're not treating you as one. So it's been, I mean, Jaden's elite defensively. It's totally been a point of contention in the Wolves fan base of kind of being like, you just paid this dude over $100 million, like 25 a year. We're expecting more. And it's that weird sort of period where you're like, yeah, they did give him that extension and you want him to be a $25 million player, but he's actually only making $3.9 million right now. Like, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not,
give him some
should
grace.
We be holding him to that at this point? Like, normally I would say no, but in this context, and you are a good team and you have bet on him so much, you just, you need more out of McDaniels. The defense is always, you know, consistent. He's such a weapon for them, but they got to find more, and I would say different ways to kind of empower him in this post-cat stretch. They need it.
You mentioned the defense for McDaniels being sort of something that travels and is a consistent, and that's been the constant all season long. Pretty much every iteration of the Wolves have been clamping people up. And that's been, and so much of that, as you mentioned at the beginning, kind of goes back to Rudy Gobert looking dramatically better pretty much all season than he did all of last season.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you have any thoughts about the frequency with which he seems to be getting frustrated with the refs. I know that it's a long-term issue with Rudy. It's a multiple time thing, but it's also sort of, it seems like it's an ongoing thing with the team. And so I'm wondering, like, at a time where you kind of can't afford a whole lot of other stuff, it does seem like that's gotten louder too. Obviously, the insinuation of the refs being on the take, that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, I think there's a place to start before that, right?
Sure.
Like, because that the refs are on the take is like a whole different level of frustration with the refs, right?
Sure.
And I think what you're getting at is you've watched a lot of Wolves games and they've kind of started to look like Mavs games, right?
There's a little bit of like everything that doesn't, like, I can understand Anthony Edwards looking at it and saying, I'm driving 20 times a game.
Yeah.
I should probably get more of the whistles than I do. Mm-hmm. But it does sort of feel like almost any time something goes up and it doesn't draw a whistle, somebody is like waving their arms wide out and going like, what's the matter? Why didn't I get this? Which then leads to it becomes maybe a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Ant and Cat do that all the time.
Yeah.
And I think, Dan, like, honestly, I think they believe because they're the Timberwolves or because they're a smaller market team that they don't get the respect that they deserve. And I think that disrespect, when they contextualize it with how good their record has been, you know, that grievance grows. And I think it's grown over the course of the season, where they've maintained being the one seed almost the entirety of the year. And they're feeling the same frustration about the whistle they get or don't get. Though I remember I was in Chicago right around the trade deadline and they lose that game. It's one of the times that the late game offense fell apart and they were frustrated with the refs again. Which they have been after pretty much every single loss. But it was interesting to me that Gobert then said, he goes, I think the refs are a problem, but they're not going to change, and we need to operate accordingly within that restraint. And I think that's the right mentality, you know? Right. But now fast forward, it's been another month. The grievances grow.
Right.
The frustration grows. And I think the Cleveland game, when Rudy did that, like, it was their fourth back-to-back since the All-Star break. They got there from Indiana the day before. There was just that, you know, we're not always the best versions of ourselves when we're a little tired.
Man,
like,
listen.
I think, right? Like, I was tired there too, man. I was in Indiana. I went to Cleveland too. And I'm like, you know, there was some extra irritation, you know, baked in there. And it was a pretty ridiculous end of the game. Like, I get where Rudy's coming from. Completely out of line to, you know, get his team a technical in that situation and basically cost him the game, which he said he did. But he also doubled down and he said, I stand by what my signal was there. I believe it's truly the truth. And I'm standing there in the scrum and I'm like, oh, Rudy, buddy, like, this isn't going to go well to you. But I talked to him afterwards and he's like, no, man, I want it out there. Like, it's what he thinks. And, you know, he said, I'll take the bullet again for it. But the greater point is, I think, Dan, they believe internally that they have a legitimate gripe, that they are not getting the respect or even just a neutral level of respect. And I don't know. I hate these topics. Like,
sure.
I just would like to think that it all kind of comes out in the wash. And I don't know if it actually does or not. It's a hard thing to cover. You got Wolves fans here being like, you need to ask them about this. This is ridiculous. You know, complain for us. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know, like, what the proper level of griping is from a, you know, a fan media or from the players. But it feels like it's getting to kind of a disorienting space. And it was like that in Denver, too, last year, man. Like, that was the vibe in the locker room, too, talking to some of those players after they lost. It was just like, we get screwed here. And there's video evidence of it. Like Rudy got shoved in game five by Jokic and it would have made a difference and all that. But I don't know. I'm just always of the belief of the initial Gobert comment in Chicago. Understand that it's not going to be perfect and try to move ahead accordingly. Don't derail yourself. Rudy derailed himself, derailed the team by doing that in Cleveland, and he cost him that game. So I don't know. There's got to be some sort of middle ground, but I would like to see, they've had a couple days to practice here, being like, all right, you know, Finch or whoever talking to me, like, let's chill out here. Let's move forward and not beat ourselves, because it feels like that's what they've been doing.
Yeah. Oh, it's a very human and relatable thing. Like Rudy Gobert, not always the most relatable person for NBA fans, you know, somebody that has obviously come under significant scrutiny in a lot of contexts yeah. over the years, but he is somebody who also like when we face circumstances outside our control, sometimes we wind up lashing out against them, right? Like that is something that
particularly when we're tired,
like when you know that everything that you need to do is getting harder. Like his job just got even harder than it was already. And it was already a pretty friggin' hard job. Yeah. While I didn't think it made a whole lot of sense for him to react the way he did in the moment. And then I was like, well, that is going to be a literal like six figure string yeah. of words you just said. That's going to be the most expensive truth you've ever spoken. I understand that feeling. And so I think that's where you identify, or the point you made about the vibes is one that I'm kind of interested in. This season has been the vibes have been so good. It has been so marked by positivity. The massive gambles working, Ant looking like he's on his way to making his first All-NBA team. Towns staying, you know, before this, staying healthy enough to like kind of offer the reminder to people of why he had been praised and valued so highly. Gobert reminding people what it looks like when a defensive player of the year walks in the building. All of these things, like everybody moving in the same direction. And now there is this uncertainty, right? And so as we're talking now, it's Tuesday and the ahead of what could be an absolutely massive game against the Clippers, who are now two games back in fourth place there. If the Clippers win this game, it knocks the season series at two games apiece. If the Wolves win it, they win the head-to-head matchup, which is, you know, huge for potentially proceeding. And there's also then a gap between fourth and the Pelicans in fifth, although the Pelicans have been red hot. It's unlikely the Wolves drop any further than fourth. I know many projection systems have them as most likely to be in third, but I'm wondering, just given the way the team has looked of late, given the nature of things without Kat, what is the matchup of these teams that are sort of in that cluster, you know, trying to get out of the play and get up into 5-6, whatever? Which team do you think the Wolves would be most comfortable with? And which, you know, maybe is there one where, like, if you could avoid that matchup, or if that matchup goes somewhere else, you'd be pretty happy.
You're saying
about
from a, like a getting them in the playoffs?
Yeah. If you had obviously any round one situation without Kat's going to be tough, but like of the way that sort of cluster looks, where do you think that the Wolves would be a little, you know, maybe most comfortable?
Well, it's weird. There's layers to this. So like with Kat, the team that they match up best with, I think, is the Nuggets. Mm-hmm. Not doesn't mean the most likely, but
sure,
they can do the put Kat on Jokic thing and then have Gobert ignore Aaron Gordon. And that's actually worked pretty well over the last 2 years, worked decently well in the playoffs, you know. So there's definitely some belief in the whole the Wolves match up well with the Nuggets internally. And I think everyone who's kind of watched that agrees with it. But it's the Nuggets, right? You know, who are at full strength right now and are humming, and you don't want to catch them either.
They're a real be careful what you wish for kind of situation.
Exactly. So I can't put them at the top there. Even if with Kat they match up well, they wouldn't match up well with the Nuggets now without Kat, right? You probably have to put Rudy on them, on Jokic. Maybe you do Kyle Anderson on him, and you can still get to some of that. But that one loses whatever merit it had before. And then it's like the Thunder have got him a couple times in ways... And I don't know, should we be going off the regular season here, particularly when we're talking about the Clippers? Like, that's a weird thing. But the Wolves have looked the best in their matchups against the other teams in the top four against the Clippers easily. And it's because they're an awesome isolation defensive team. Like, and that's what the Clippers are trying to do against you. And you know, they played Boston twice into overtime, beat them once, lost to them once. Like, and it's, they really could match up with them because they just got that litany of perimeter defenders with Rudy at the rim. You kind of like the Wolves' ability to match up with an isolation team and control them, contest those shots. They've really driven down Paul George's field goal percentage in those matchups. Even like Gobert's getting out to defend some of the Kawhi mid-range stuff, like taking away that Kawhi's ability to get to his spots. And I don't know, I feel like the Thunder are somewhat similar. Like, I feel like they're an offspring of the Celtics and Clippers style, but they're not just isolation to get their pull, right? Like, they're trying to isolate, get downhill to drive to the basket or to kick.
Yeah.
And the kick element of it is complicated for the Wolves because they're slow-footed, right? Now, Karl Anthony Towns has to go scram switch out to Isaiah Joe in the corner there. That's not going to go that well for you. So you go, I don't know. You kind of would lean to being the Clippers being your best choice of the three. But then when you factor in some of the, you know, experience level and do I really want to be playing against Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and James Harden? Right. I don't know. Maybe James Harden, I leave out of that sentence in the playoffs. But you know what I'm saying? And take on a Thunder team who is less experienced and smaller. The Wolves just have the physical advantage. I mean, they killed them in the play-in last season because they just played big and beat them. Now, are the Wolves even big anymore? I don't know. Does Carl come back in the middle of that series? That's the hard part. I don't even know how to contextualize the catless Wolves in the context of playoff opponents because it's just, I don't even know what that identity is. I don't even think they do yet. They're basically just trying to play the same style of basketball they would when Carl was in foul trouble or just on the bench or whatever. And they just haven't really found that clicking version of it yet outside of the, okay, Ant might take over for a quarter. So to that end, I don't know how to compare them in a playoff matchup to other teams. And they probably just lose to any of those three teams if Kat isn't there, you know, in whenever they would play him. But in theory, that would be in the second round when in theory Kat was back for. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's just kind of survive in advance right now.
Yeah. And which totally makes sense. We've had three games of this new reality and they've all been in various levels of sort of turmoil and guys in and out and availability. So still a lot to sort of figure out over the next month and a half, you know, month or so here. I want to say before we get going to a quick break, I just want to say, this is my own personal feeling on this. If the season ends earlier than we thought it would 2 weeks ago, right? If, you know, the Wolves draw a tough matchup in round one, can't get out of it, or scrape by in round one, get to a round two, can't, you know, Kat comes back, but he's not all the way there, whatever. I understand the general, like, this team's going to be super duper expensive. It's going to maybe can't carry forward in its current iteration, yada, yada, yada. This was all about like going all in for a title now. I refuse to consider this season for the Wolves a disappointment. even no matter how it ends. Like this, now you could correct me if I'm wrong. There haven't been a whole lot of seasons that have featured more joy for the Minnesota Timberwolves than this season. Correct?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just so different. I mean, I've covered the team for 7 years. Nothing has compared to it. The only other two good seasons, decently good are the year
with scare quotes around it.
Like the Pat Bev year was fun. The year before they got Gobert and they kind of found, you know, this lineup with Pat Bev and Jared Vanderbilt, and they're finally playing Kat up in coverage, and it was like kind of a lot of the things where we were like, I think if the Wolves like played a different style, leaned into playing faster, scrambled around a little bit more. And then they did it and it worked. And you were like, okay, this is kind of fun. But it had such a ceiling on it that ultimately they moved on for Gobert there. And then the only other like really good season would be the Jimmy Butler year, which was not a really good season. That was just weird, you know, even before it got really weird. It didn't have a ceiling on it so much as it just felt temporary. And the schism you could feel in the locker room grew by the day when you were there. So I think for Wolves fans, it's like, this is fun. This feels pretty sustainable. We're pretty scared about the financial future and the feasibility of keeping this together long-term, But for right now, like, they're the one seed, you know, one of the best teams in the NBA. Like, let's just enjoy it. And I've had to try to kind of temper myself too and take away that, like, what isn't working part of it and not hyper focus on the offense being a little right. mediocre and the turnovers and the late game offense. But at the same time, that's what you do once you've actually elevated your team to being believing they're good is like, now how do they go to great? And the Wolves never found that even before Cat was there, because the late game offense was a question. The turnovers have been an issue all season. That's the real bummer to me of the no Cat is if they could have found, like, if they could have strung together like five late game offense games in the final stretch of time, I would have gone in the playoffs like, yeah, I'm probably picking this team to go a little bit of a ways because I now believe in the offense. But now we're not going to hit the playoffs believing in the offense because they're not going to get a chance to show us. So they're going to need to prove that in the playoffs. And that's a little bit of a bummer to it. But yeah, overall, man, I mean, this is as good as it's ever been.
Which is worth celebrating and worth holding out hope for more event putting on the cape, if nothing else, before right. we get to the end of the season here. But we are going to take a quick break before we go any further, pay some bills, and we will be back in a minute with some more Divine Intervention. Welcome back to Divine Intervention. I'm here with Dane Moore of the Dane Moore NBA podcast. And Dane, we're going to wrap up today with something that we call the closing five, because as I'm sure you know, how you start is not nearly as important as how you finish. Five questions for our esteemed guest. Question the first. What is your relationship to the concept of Minnesota nice?
I don't like it, but it's real. it's a, you know, the five questions thing. I know I'm supposed to answer these quickly. You know, Craig Kilborn. Big Wolves fan.
Yes.
Come on my pod a couple times. I go on his pod like way too often, which I'm like, who do you think these people actually care about the Minnesota Timber? But he doesn't care. Craig Kilborn, great dude. And he's, I don't know, is Craig Kilborn to Minnesota nice? I think so. I think he's got it in there. You get born here and it's just, it's in your blood.
That's incredible. I just love the idea that, like, I'm talking to, I'm stealing the bit from the guy that you talk to on your show and on his show all the time. Fantastic. he probably won't be all that Minnesota nice when he knows that I'm stealing his bit. Question number two. Back in 2021, Anthony Edwards was asked how he makes sure that the Wolves bring the same energy into a game. He said, I talk my shit before the game. I put Little Baby on, rap the lyrics. That get everybody hype. We up. It's time to go. So, Dane, how do you make sure you bring the same energy into each podcast you host?
Same way.
Exact same way.
For 3 years now, it's just been the same thing. God, man. Oh, God, no. I get hyped for my podcast with like a stiff coffee in the morning. It's tough, man. It's tough. You go to the games at night and I'm my like worst version of myself, I think, on my podcast. Like first, which is probably not a
public
thing.
Facing thing you show thing. Everybody.
I know it's
at
stupid.
Your worst.
But you're like, okay, I got to do a pod. Like first thing in the morning, we got to talk about the Wolves Clippers game, and coffee's my answer.
That's a great answer. Question number three: what is the first thing you think of when you think of the Tom Thibodeau era Wolves or Tom Thibodeau?
I got a story.
yes.
So the Wolves do actually really cool, like Christmas event every year where they take the kids out to, you know, like a $500 gift certificate at Target, sponsor of the Wolves. And they take them around or whatever. And that was my first year covering the NBA was Tom Thibodeau was the coach. And so one, I'm not like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm intimidated. I'm for sure scared of Tom Thibodeau. And I don't know if we ever really had a conversation for more than 3 minutes, but we're at this event and Tibbs, you know, maybe he's a little out of his water at Target walking around doing Christmas, buying Christmas gifts. And he shows me like, I don't know why his Fitbit, like, which was like really a thing back in 2017, 18.
Sure.
And he's like, I, you know, I can't figure out this thing. Or no, he was asking me about what Twitter is. That's how it started. And he thought it was, it sent out group emails to all your followers. I'm like, well, I don't know, kind of like that. And he like pulls out his phone and he's showing me, or maybe the thing that was up on his phone was his Fitbit. And I was like, Tom, only 4 hours of sleep last night. He goes, we won. That was a good night. I was like, okay, that's awesome. Tibbs, man, I've covered the whole weird spectrum of coaches in a good way. They've all been good to me. But Tom Thibodeau is so different than Ryan Saunders is so different than Chris Finch.
Yeah, I would imagine in pretty dramatic ways. Also, the idea of Tom Thibodeau asking for an explanation of what Twitter is and the idea of what Tom Thibodeau's Twitter persona would be is probably going to keep me from getting more than 4 hours of sleep tonight. Question number four. Hang in here with me for this one. According to Mark Lukowski, an engineer who left Microsoft for Google back in 2004, Steve Ballmer once responded to the news of his departure by saying, quote, "Fucking Eric Schmidt is a fucking I'm going to fucking bury that guy. I've done it before and I'll do it again. I'm going to fucking kill Google." Eric Schmidt is now the money guy for Timberwolves ownership. Do you think that he is investing explicitly for the purpose of derailing Ballmer's Clippers?
I mean, the battle starts tonight, right? Wolves, Clippers. No, I have no idea, as just an aside, what the heck is going on with the whole Wolves ownership. And I should say that in the context of it's been such a bizarre process. They were sold in COVID. Glenn Taylor, the current owner and longtime owner, wanted to kind of get the transition process going, but it was the middle of the pandemic and they set up this plan that's going to be 3 years, which that 3 year thing is now, and it's still not completely done or clear of what exactly is going on. Apparently Ballmer's enemy is now involved. I don't know. I just hope that they can buy the team and pay the luxury tax next season. I don't, maybe I shouldn't say that. I don't care who the money is coming from, but I kind of don't really care who the money is coming from.
Sure.
I just want the Timberwolves here and maybe to get a new stadium. I don't know. They need a lot of cash. They need a lot of cash. So we'll take it from Google, bro.
And, if this leads to Steve Ballmer, I guess, saying the kinds of things that you just heard bleeped out, in front of a national audience, so much the better. Dane got to hear all of it. Steve Ballmer, naughty boy. Don't ever want to say that on a microphone again.
Daddy and that.
Yep, cut that out or keep it in and double it, one or the other. Speaking of the arena and the new stadium, question number five. 2 years ago in a Reddit Ask Me Anything, always a dangerous start, you told a Wolves fan that you don't have to park your car at the arena because you walk to the home games. I don't know a lot about Minnesota, but walking outside seems like a real bad idea. Sell me on the pedestrian lifestyle there in Minnesota.
How did you find that?
We've got a crack research staff of two here at Divine Intervention, and the other guy found it. Super producer John Gennaro, who counts me in.
I love it. I love walking to and from the stadium. I will say this, and I'll rip my buddy Jace Frederick, who covers the Wolves for the St. Paul Pioneer
Wonderful
Press.
Wonderful job, yeah, for the Pioneer Press.
He lives in Wisconsin and drives in and drives in to work every day, sometimes twice a day. You go for a shoot around in the morning, you go home and you come back. And I can't say that what I do walking to and from the stadium is any bit weirder than what my buddy Jace does, driving 45 minutes each way to and from the stadium. But I don't know, man. It's good to get outside. And yeah, it's winter. But I mean, there's been no snow here this summer. Put a hat on. I don't know. I got Minnesota nice in my blood. I know how to do it.
That's right. Yeah, it's coursing through your veins, keeping you warm with fury, even as you keep a placid exterior. I love it. I love all of it. Please don't tell Kilby that I ripped off his bit. After closing five, the last thing we do here on Divine Intervention is a weekly recommendation. It does not have to be about basketball. Can be about anything in the world. Just something you think is cool and good you would like to recommend to the folks. Examples in recent episodes have included Outshine Popsicles, listening to Andre 3000's flute record, books about facial recognition technology, and the show Reservation Dogs. Can be kind of whatever. So, Dane, something that you enjoy you'd like to share with the people.
I was thinking, I was like, okay, this is probably similar to the open where I had to tell you something that drew joy. I was like, okay, here's an opportunity to do a really deep emotional series or movie that I've watched. And you sent me the email for this. I was talking with my girlfriend. I'm like, what should I say here? I was like, have we watched anything cool recently? She goes, well, we did binge that whole show Traitors over the weekend. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm embarrassed to admit that, but I did do that. And it is reality TV that is so dumb. But also nostalgically, reminds me of when I first started watching reality TV, at the appropriate time in 2004. you know? And there was something fun about it. It was just like this traitors versus faithful. There's like someone's secretly a traitor. And it reminds me of Celebrity Mole was a show I watched. Dennis Rodman is my favorite player of all time. And Dennis Rodman was on that show. And so all weekend, I was just sitting back nostalgically thinking about Dennis Rodman being on reality TV. And I guess I watched reality TV. The Traitors, it was good. As far as reality TV goes, I have fun with it.
Well, first off, Dane, you have no reason to feel self-conscious about that or to be apologetic about it. This is a recommendation engine about like stuff that you've enjoyed. That's cool. So that's totally fine. You do not have to feel some type of way about it. Also,
it's mostly an indictment, I think, of how lame my life gets in the middle of basketball season.
Listen, you don't get to be the lame one on my show. That's my corner. Get off of it. But Dennis Rodman, Celebrity Mole, who knew that he would wind up becoming such an important part of international relations and so many other things over the years. So yeah, really. Yeah,
so many things.
Much to consider. My recommendation, also something from, it was actually something from a number of years ago that I rewatched. The show Terriers, it was an FX show that is now on, you can find it on Hulu. One season ran in like 2010, and it is, it's like a noir crime comedy kind of show. Two-hander, got a recovering alcoholic ex-cop, his ex-con buddy who's gone straight. They work together as private detectives in like the scumbum surf town in Southern California. There's some good like overarching mystery to it and some crime story stuff, but it's really about two guys being pals, dudes being dudes. The two leads have incredible chemistry, Donald Logue as the ex-cop and Michael Raymond James as the ex-con. I just find them incredibly winning to watch together on screen, perhaps because I look a little bit like a down-market Donald Logue. You can get the side-by-side on their Google images. I'm not going to do it for you, but you do your math, you do your Googles. And while it is the kind of on-screen partnership I do wish I had gotten to watch for longer because I would like there to make more of it, they only made one season of it, but that means it's 13 episodes. It's pretty easily bingeable. And what is trapped in amber there for me is kind of pretty perfect. It goes out on a great like kicker line, like the last scene of the show, I feel like is a real good stick the landing kind of thing. We don't always get that in the things that we love. So if you like pulpy crime fiction with jokes and heart and a guy who looks kind of like me, I cannot recommend highly enough Terriers on FX. It'll do you right. Speaking of things that'll do you right, the Dane Moore NBA podcast, friends, wherever you listen to high-end podcasts like this one, I recommend that to you. Dane, anywhere else you'd like to point people on the way out the door, something you'd like to recommend, etc.?
Man, I just recommend watching the Wolves, right?
Like, that's
it's,
right.
It's an interesting team and even more interesting, you know, right now. And it's a cool story, right? Of a team who's not normally here. I think they maybe didn't quite get enough. We're joking at the beginning. I'm doing two national podcasts today, getting a lot more shine when things aren't going well. But they've been a fun team, man. And like, I love how much they've taught me about defense, you know, and watching that and learning that on a daily basis with Gobert it's fun. Like if you're a basketball nerd, man, they got all the parts. They got Rudy there defending the rim, and then they got the, you know, the cherry on top with Ant. Who knows what's going to happen with him? Like, watch the Wolves.
I do love that it's like, as a basketball nerd, there's so much I can learn there. And one of my big things was like, it's pretty good to be friggin' huge. Like if everybody's friggin' huge all over the place, it means you're probably going to be better at defense. So that was made of my high level analysis. Come to Divine Intervention for that. Come to the Dane Moore NBA podcast for stuff smarter than that. That is going to do it for this episode of Divine Intervention. Thanks again to Dane Moore for taking all this time to be with us and reconnect with his washed up self. Thanks so much to super producer John Gennaro for all the things that he does to make this show look and sound great. Vinny Goodwill will be back with Tom Haberstroh, special guest on a new episode of The Good Word tomorrow. I will be back with Jake Fisher on No Cap Room on Thursday. And I think that's about it. Thank you so much for listening. Take care of yourself. You deserve it.